Thank you, Ellen, and welcome everybody. Today, very pleased to have Ashley Bacow and Kenneth Aldridge from to talk about the Rosen Hotels and Resorts story. And some of you may have heard my TED Talk or read the case study in my books about Rosen Hotels and Resorts, but one of the great things about what they're doing there is they never rest on their laurels. Even though they have an amazing story, there's always more to do, is what we find. And so what we're going to do is start out by having Ashley and Kenneth kind of introduce themselves a little bit more and kind of give some of the history of how they came to where they're at today. And so we'll go through that. And then, that'll take some time. And then I've got some questions, some areas that I'm pretty sure that even if you have read the case study or listened to the TED Talk, you probably haven't heard. There's some new wrinkles in there. And I think you'll be interested to hear about that. And then we'll, as Ellen was mentioning, we will kind of wrap up and then go into the Q&A section. So again, use that Q&A box that you have in your Zoom interface. But with that, why don't I pass the baton to Ashley and Kenneth to describe a little of the history, kind of how you each work with each other and your roles, and look forward to hearing the story. I always pick up new things, even though I've done a site visit out at the Rosen Hotels and the medical center there. And it's a great story, but there's always more to learn. So thanks again for joining us today, Ashley and Kenneth.
Thank you. It's good to be here. Thank you for having us. My name is Ashley Bacow. I'm the risk manager for Rosen Hotels. And Kenneth Aldridge, who is the director of health services for Rosen Hotels, is with me. Kenneth is boots on the ground day-to-day at our medical center. And I have a tremendous amount of involvement in it, but at a I'm at 10,000 feet. In 1974, Harris Rosen opened up Rosen Hotels, and he's a bit of a maverick in the hotel industry. So he opened up a 224-room hotel, and he's parlayed that into being the largest independent hotelier in the Southeast United States. He's very commonsensical and matter of fact and innovative, we think. So in 1991, we got an insurance renewal that was much more than we expected. Our claims were so much lower than the premium that we were paying in, we just assumed that we would get a decrease in premiums. And when we got the big increase, Mr. Rosen said, you need to get the president of that insurance company on the phone. And we said, well, I don't know if we can exactly do that. So anyway, he got a very top level person on the phone. He said, hey, I think maybe you guys didn't calculate this correctly. And so they said, no, we calculated correctly. But the pool that you were in did not have good experience. Yes, you had good experience, but the pool that you were in did not have good experience. And Mr. Rosen said, I didn't know I was in a pool and I want out of the pool. I don't want to be in the pool anymore. And he goes, and the insurance company executive said, well, you have no choice. It's just part of the deal. You have to be in the pool. And so Mr. Rosen said, no, I'm out. And he became self-insured. He cut a deal directly with providers in the hospital chain and just kind of cut out the middle person, although there is a third-party administrator, kind of cut out the insurance company who was taking the risk. And then we hired a part-time doc and opened up our little primary care facility, our Rosen Medical Center. And we currently at Rosen have about 6,000 covered lives under our plan. We didn't back then. We've kind of evolved over the years. When we opened, we had a part-time doc, part-time doc, a medical assistant, and somebody at the front desk. And it was nothing like it is today. You start small and you just kind of build on it. And so with every new hire, every kind of new doc that we've added over the years, just anybody, we would ask them, hey, is there anything that you've always wanted to do that made sense, but the insurance industry kind of, you know, the insurance companies kind of stifled that, or the medical industry kind of stifled that. And they come up with these great ideas that they've been wanting to do for years. And that's part of the evolution. We build upon that. We might see a news article and build upon that. And so long story short, we have about 60 employees now, and Kenneth will get into some of the services that we provide, but we provide a lot more than just primary care. Every employee of Rosen Hotels that's eligible for health insurance, if they want health insurance at Rosen Hotels, they have to use the medical center. And so that's a pretty heavy burden on us, because we're kind of restricting their ability to go to any doctor in town. And so if we're giving them a limited number of docs, we have to have great docs, and we have to provide great care, and our service level has to be good. So anyway, we're not perfect. We drop the ball sometimes, but focus laser-like, not only on primary care and prevention, that you'll hear a lot about that from Kenneth in a little bit, but we are just focused laser-like on just service in general. Our costs are 30 to 50% less than our costs would be, than an identical demographic cost would be in the conventional healthcare setting. And so usually when you have a tremendous cost reduction like that, when you kind of look at that graph, your costs are kind of going down, and you usually expect a commensurate reduction in benefits, but quite the opposite. So this is this funky looking graph that doesn't look quite like it's true, even, because it's just so hard to believe. But our costs 30 to 50% less, and our benefits are tremendously rich. I mean, we don't have deductibles. You know, in order to hit, you know, Affordable Care Act forces us to put the you know, max out of pocket in our plan. In order for someone to we can't think of a conceivable way for someone to hit the, you know, the out of pocket max. Bear with me. Our compliance rates in general, and Kenneth will get into more detail, but our compliance rates, like for mammograms, for hypertension, for cholesterol, for hypertension, our compliance rates are about twice the national average. And again, our philosophy is kind of simple, very commonsensical. As soon as someone becomes eligible for our health plan, we get them down to the medical center and we run a battery of tests on them. And although it's not exactly like that, Kenneth, you're going to probably butcher this, but in my mind, it's almost like picture an Outlook calendar. You have your first visit, you get this, you get all these reports or whatever, and it has things on there like, okay, you know, back when I started here, you know, Ashley Bacot, you know, 30 years old. Well, guess what? In 19 years, you know, we are going to be calling him and saying, you have to have that, you know, that you have to have that colonoscopy. So anyway, we kind of feel like we've got everything kind of charted out on the calendar, when to follow up with you for this, that, and the other. And Kenneth, I'll let you maybe get into a little bit more detail.
Yeah. So again, thank you for having us. So yeah, 1991, we established that program. So here we are today, fast forward 2019. We've grown not only as an organization, but also as our medical staff. You know, we have 4 MDs, 3 nurse pracs, a PA, a chiropractor, a podiatrist, laboratory services, a dietitian, digital x-ray, ultrasound, sleep studies. We have a little bit of everything, even physical therapy. You know, the whole goal is to make it accessible. So we focus on 5 things: access, quality, service, cost, and innovation. You know, from an access point, we got to make sure that we have the availability for not only the primary care physicians, but also those ancillary services. You know, we brought in physical therapy in-house back in 2011, 2012, because we recognize that our population, 20% of our patient population are coming from third world countries, and many of them don't have the access to reasonable transportation. They're taking two or three buses just to get to work. So we all know, everybody here from the Health Rosettas in healthcare, and we all know that, you know, if we can't provide the service, we need to bring it to them, or else they're not going to use it. So we put in physical therapy into our facility, and we actually went from 2 half days to 5 full days because of the service being within our facility. So having everything in one place makes it easier, makes it a one-stop shop, and it increases compliance. So you heard Ashley talking about our compliance rates. So we have programs established that we're actually looking at medication compliance on top of the traditional disease process compliance. And so we're looking at levels for our cardiovascular compliance, and we're at 96%. That means people are taking the medications like they're supposed to. But let's take a step back. What's really happening in healthcare? 35% of Americans can't afford healthcare, and they're delaying care. At Rosen, what do we have? We have 68% of our prescriptions over the, I think it's like 50,000 prescriptions that we have written, have a zero copay, because we've established that program to provide access. What are most employers doing? They're adding on copays, copays and co-insurance and deductibles on their pharmacy plans now. So you're telling me that you're going to tell that individual, maybe a housekeeper, that they've got to pay $200 before they can get their hypertensive med? Well, here at Rosen, we've removed those barriers. So we removed the barriers to the access for pharmaceutical medications so that they can take what they need to control their disease. Instead of going backwards, where all these employers are saying, I'm going to put more deductibles, and those patients can't afford their high blood pressure medicine, where do they end up? In the emergency room. Where do they end up? Admitted. Where do they end up? With a stroke. How much is that stroke going to cost the employer? About $90,000. What about diabetics? You read, even to this day, in the Wall Street Journal, they're talking about how insulin is so expensive. Ms. Rosen just sent me an article that one of the employers is going to put a max cap on how much somebody has to pay for their insulin. I think it was like $25. What has Rosen done? They took the copay off of the insulin, has increased the compliance on our insulin, and actually increased utilization on our insulin, which is fine because we keep them compliant and keep them out of the hospital. The whole basis of our program is a one-stop shop, population health management, primary care, patient-centered medical home, where we're managing, we Rosen Medical Center, who's inside the hospital. We know exactly who's there, when they're, what the disease is, what the reason they're there, what are they going to have done, what's the discharge planning, and we're planning that discharge the moment they go into the hospital. 96,000 people die a year in the hospitals. Do we really want to keep them there and look at the cost to the employers? So what we do is our case managers, our medical director, myself, we're looking at, can we safely discharge that patient to a skilled nursing facility, to home health care, back into our hands, whatever it is, versus that hospital sector. We have put together many, many, many programs, not only an in-house dispensary within our medical center, because did you know that I think it's 25 to 30% of Americans will never fill their first prescription? Why? Because they can't afford it. Why? Because it's not convenient. I mean, there's many, many variables that we've looked at, so we brought it in-house so that when they're leaving their doctor's office, the majority of the time they're walking out with that prescription, increases the probability that they're going to take it, increases the methodology that they're going to get to optimal health. Another program that we put in many years ago was our pregnancy case management. And we've had bumps and bruises in relation to that. And we put that in where we actually have a nurse. Was it 56 to 58% of our pregnancies are high risk. That's off the charts. That's, you know, it's not acceptable. But when we're talking advanced maternal age, when we're talking HIV, diabetes, high blood pressure, you have a mom that has high blood pressure, she becomes preeclamptic or eclamptic, and now we have a premature baby and maybe even a passed away mom. So we have our nurse, she's responsible for managing every one of those pregnant patients along with the high-risk pregnancies to make sure that they're getting their prenatals, that they're, they've begun the Healthy Start program, and that we're doing touch points all along the way of the continuum of their pregnancy until they deliver, and then right back into our hands. Now, all of these programs have really helped Rosen Hotels and Resorts and Rosen Health System control our costs. And I'm sure, Dave, you're going to ask us a whole bunch of other questions. But again, it's not rocket science. It's what does your population need? Did we need to put in take-home sleep studies? Well, yeah, because some of our patients couldn't get to the sleep centers, number one. Number two, those sleep studies could range between $700 and $1,000. Well, let's bring in our own sleep studies, let the patients go home with it, increases compliance. We know if it's abnormal, and if it's abnormal, then we go ahead and get them to the sleep centers. And we know that sleep is a major issue that's causing other disease processes that are costing employers even more money.
And just a couple of comments. You reminded me of a couple of things. One barrier to care is inconvenience. So I'll give you a pretty neat example. It doesn't always play out like this, but you'll get kind of a sense for how you can get your care kind of rapidly instead of it being kind of disjointed and spread out over several days or months or things like that. So I went into the medical center. My back was hurting. Saw the primary care doc at first. They said, hey, let's kind of walk you down the hall and let you talk to the chiro. Walked down the hall. Chiropractor, looked at me and said some things and did some stuff and then said, yeah, we really need to get you some PT. We walked on down the hall. We went to PT. And listen, it doesn't always play out like that in the same day. But it does give you a feel for in the real world. I go to finally get my appointment to my primary care doc. Primary care doc says, go to the chiro. Well, I've got a bunch of meetings and stuff, and I'm getting ready to go on vacations, and I never set up my appointment for the chiro, or if I do, it may be 3 weeks before I get there, and then chiro sends me to the PT. At that point, maybe I'm going, do I really want to go through and do this? So the convenience of it is very, very helpful.
Yeah. So, you heard that we have, primary care and, some specialty with the chiropractor and with the podiatrist, but there's going to be times that we, that a case is outside of our realm. So we've established relationships within the Orlando community for like a gastroenterologist. Well, many moons ago, we would have to send our patient to the hospital to get a colonoscopy. And we all know how much that costs. I mean, it's unacceptable that just the cost of renting that surgical suite. So we went in with our gastroenterologist, and they had an on-site gastro center where they can do endoscopies and colonoscopies. And we partnered with them. We contracted with them and cut our costs by 70%, 80%, but then also look at the convenience. The patient doesn't have to go to the hospital and walk around the hospital, get to the colonoscopy, and all those inconveniences only prevents that person from wanting to get it again. So we partnered with some of the best specialists in the community, established relationships, because you know what? Patients are not compliant and sometimes not the easiest. So that gastroenterologist can call us up and say, Ashley Bacow is not coming in. He's not following up with us. And we can raise our hand, call Ashley Bacow and say, guess what? Knocking on the door. Hey, guess we need to make sure you get the colonoscopy because of X, Y, Z. So we can encourage them and follow up with them. And on the specialty realm, we've actually put in a program. We call it the 30 and 90 day on our referrals. So if we refer a patient, we're contacting that specialist to see if Ashley Bacow went that 30 days. And if not, we're calling that patient and then we're going to track again in 90 days to make sure that the patients go. Not everybody is compliant and it's not easy getting to specialties, but we're going to make sure that if we've referred somebody to a cardiologist, gastroenterologist, dermatologist, whatever it might be, we're going to make sure that they go and encourage them. I mean, we don't mandate it. Patients have the right of determination. They can, if they choose that they don't want to do it, then you know what? We need to better educate them as to why we did it. Why are we sending you for this little spot on your arm? Well, guess what? It could be melanoma and you could die if we have to get to that realm. Many years ago, back, I think it was 2010, 2011, we decided to look, well, no, it was actually 2006 that we started testing and looking at our mammogram compliance rates. And I know, you know, there's going to be somebody on here who's going to say, oh, you shouldn't do mammograms till you're 50, you know, and looking at the guidelines and those kind of things. And that's great, you know, from a, if you're looking at everybody in general, 1 in 5,000 people will have breast cancer. Okay, that's great. But what if that's your mom? What if that's your daughter? What if that's your sister? That makes a difference. And so what we've done is we partnered with, you know, a system, and we were able to help them buy into a mammogram program. And when we were looking at it, we were like, our mammogram compliance rates are in the sub 40%, even to 30%, and that's not acceptable. So we decided to find out why. Why are our females, our family, our members not going to get their mammograms done? And some of the things that we had been told as we were conducting the survey is, number one, transportation. Number two, translation. Because again, 35% of our population speak Creole. Cost, fear was another one. So we said, you know what, we've got to find a way to break this issue. And so we partnered with a group, and we were able to put together a mammogram program, and we shot up our rates over the years up to greater than 90% on the mammograms. And we actually, at the Rosen Medical Center, our policy is that it's at, you know, 35 years old or greater, and if you're high risk, even earlier. And, you know, I know there might be some physicians on here who are saying, well, why are you doing them at 35 or even 40, high risk of, you know, falls to, but guess what? We have found some moms that were not high risk. We wouldn't have done it according to the guidelines. And guess what did we find? We found issues. We found breast cancer, and we were able to intervene, do a lumpectomy versus having to, maybe she dies. You know, we actually had a case of a mom. She came into our program at, she was 47 years old, came into our program. You know, we called her up, said, welcome to Rosen Medical Center. Said, hey, oh, you're 47 years old. When was your last mammogram? I've never had one. I'm never getting one. We were able to get her in with our provider. It took us 3 months to finally convince her to get it done. One day we had our mammogram program running. Our physician and our nurse said, hey, why don't you just come check it out? And walk them through the process. And she saw it was a great process. It looked non-invasive. It looked welcoming. She had it done. What did we find? Breast cancer. And not even a month ago, we found 2 25-year-olds with breast cancer. So these are the kind of things that we've recognized for our population that we're going to bring in-house. We're going to bring it to them. We'll bring it to the hotels. We'll bring it to the properties. We're bringing healthcare to them. And that's the difference that Rosen Hotels and Rosen Medical Center has done via the Access, Quality, Service, Cost, and Innovation.
Great. Well, thanks for the overview. I want to go back and have a couple follow-up questions or things that I believe I've heard before that are worth pointing out. I think I've heard you state that when you started this, there was about 500 people in the plan when you opened your medical center. Is that about the right number?
I think that's about right.
And you're at 6,000 covered lives now, I think is what you just said.
Correct.
And I think you've used, as you benchmarked versus other companies, kind of like employers, what's the total you estimate you've saved over those 20 some years?
We have saved, I think the last little number we ran was 350 million. Was it?
Yeah, somewhere around that. I thought it was in the 360s.
Yeah, maybe $360 million. But listen, that's not a linear thing, right? Because it started off with 500. We've got 6,000 now. So we're saving about, you know, $20 million a year now.
Well, and I think one of the, no question, that's got to help the business and, you know, growing business, not having to take out loans and things like that at higher levels. But for those who aren't aware of some of the kind of non-medical benefits, can you share a little bit about, I call it the Health Rosetta dividend, you know, when you don't squander money in, you know, wasteful, overly expensive healthcare, then you have the ability to reinvest that into your people. And, you know, I've heard pretty much every CEO I've ever met has said some variation of employees are our most important asset. So tell me a little bit about how does that translate in terms of ways you invest in your employees outside of the medical realm?
Yeah, so one of the things that we have done, Mr. Rosen is really big into healthcare and to education. And so on the education side, our employees and their dependents, we will pay for their college education. It's a safety net. So if they earn it, you know, if they earn it on their own, I mean, there's no need for us to have to pay for it. But if we have a housekeeper that comes to work for us and she has 9 children, those children can be guaranteed, you know, to go to college. You have to work here for 3 years in order for that to kick in. We don't want adverse selection. Somebody coming in for 3 weeks. But that's one thing that we've done. Another is he has adopted about 20 years ago, adopted a crime ridden, neighborhood, not too far from his main office. And, he was convinced that if he gave these, families hope, these children hope, that they would be able to have a nice education and be able to grow out of that crime-ridden, you know, kind of neighborhood. So the neighborhood is not yet gated, but the crime is hardly there at all. And what he gave them was he said, anybody in this neighborhood, I will pay for your child's college education, and I'm talking about a free boat. So it's in Florida, has to be in a Florida school, but he will pay for everything, books, tuition, room, board, coming back to see grandma, you know, Christmas time. I mean, he really is taking care of it. What they have to do, though, is agree to, you know, read to their children, and that doesn't always get done, but they at least sign a little piece of paper that they'll read to their children, and we tutor them all along the way. So that healthcare savings has freed up money to allow us to do some of those things. And he just adopted a neighborhood 3 times that size in the epicenter of Orlando. Same kind of scenario, crime ridden, but we are convinced that we're going to change the face of Orlando. And his hope is to get other people to do this across the nation. And he calls it changing America one underserved neighborhood at a time.
So Dave, let me tell you. So Mr. Rosen called me up one day and he gave me a little example of, you know, what he had accomplished because of Tangelo Park. So he called me up. He said he just went to Walgreens to pick up a prescription, and he said that there was a person at the window who came up to the car and said, "Hey, are you Mr. Rosen?" And Mr. Rosen said yes. And he goes, "Well, you don't know me, but I'm such and such, and you sent me to college, gave me hope, and I'm now a pharmacist." I mean, my hairs are still standing up again from that, you know, but that's the kind of stuff. Look at what he was able to provide. And look, that individual's a pharmacist being providing back to the community, giving back. And also, hey, well, look at the revenues that he's bringing in from taxes. Where would they have been if Mr. Rosen would not have stepped in? But even a pharmacist. I'm Walgreens, by the way.
Yeah, that's amazing. correct me if I'm wrong on these numbers, but as I recall, crime rates went down over 60% and high school graduation rates doubled in that neighborhood over that period of time. Is that right?
Yes. And our annual costs for supporting that program, although the number of students that are going to college are increasing, our costs are going down, and we go, what is going on? And because we didn't have a monthly dashboard on it or anything, we were going, something's up. Well, they're earning their scholarships now, so it's very, very cool.
Yeah, and that's a great story. One of the other things I think it's important for people to hear in this as well is Florida is not an easy place to be efficient with your healthcare spending. You know, 40% of the most expensive hospitals in America are in Florida. You know, it's, you know, the systems can kind of run amok there. So the fact that you've done this against that backdrop, and you mentioned earlier the, I think it was 56% of the pregnancies are categorized high risk, you know, which we all know. In fact, wasn't there a kind of a trigger that you put in place a new program around pregnancy that unfortunately had a bad experience years back that triggered that? Can you share that story of, I think there was a preemie and what happened there?
So Kenneth will get into maybe some of the details of the program, but we had a preemie. It was about, I think, about $1.2 million. And we were going, wow, what's going on here? Well, what we were doing is we were following the normal conventional healthcare protocol. And that is, one of our employees comes to the medical center. We give them the, you know, they take the pregnancy test. They're positive, and we refer them out to the OBGYN and then check that off our list. Boom, out of our world now. The OBGYN will take care of them. They'll come to us for whatever other things that they need outside of the realm of that. Well, what happened was the person wasn't showing up for their appointments, or rarely showed up for their appointments. And so the, unbeknownst to us, the conventional healthcare settings stuff continued to roll along. So that doctor, wrote in the little file that they called the person and followed up with them three times. And then they kind of wrote them off, you know, off the list. So, we said, wow, I mean, you know, here, and it's so interesting. I'm giving this example because, listen, along we keep learning every day about, you know, new stuff where, you know, we probably should have seen a long time ago, but we're kind of relying on the conventional healthcare system. But anyway, long story short, we decided to put a pregnancy case management program in place. And Kenneth, you might want to speak to that.
Yeah, I gave some examples in the very beginning of how we established one nurse that is responsible for managing all the case, the patients. We have about 60 pregnancies per year. But again, when you have a advanced maternal age of somebody who was 52 that had a baby, I mean, you're talking high risk. And when you add into that our diabetic population, when you add into that, we have 1,000, almost 1,100 high blood pressure patients. Well, guess what? Some of those are going to become pregnant. Now, we had to do something to be proactive. Patient comes in, gets diagnosed. We give them the prenatals right at the point of care, get them into the Healthy Start program if they qualify, get them to the high-risk OB, and then manage the case the entire way. Touch points not only with the patient, but touch points with the high-risk OB. And, to give you some numbers. So our pregnancy rate, our premature pregnancy rate, I think it was in the 7%, 8% for our pregnancies. Now, you know, some of our pregnancies were at 36 weeks. The definition is anything less than 37 weeks. Well, some of ours were in the 36.1, 36.5 weeks. That's not fair, but still, we count it as a premature baby. But, you know, let's look at it and take a step back. We've had moms who came to us that they were they had a premature baby at 24, 25 weeks. Well, you know what? We're jumping for joy if we can get mom with the next baby to 30 weeks. Does that ding us on our rate? Yes. But does it save us money? Yes, it does. So we've got that program up and running. We're managing that program, and it's been very successful. Have we had premature babies? Yes, we have. But, you know, I think the last report, our youngest was 35 weeks. So we'll take that in a heartbeat.
Yeah. And going back to Ash's example of having the back pain, want to call out that in particular, because number one, lower back pain is the second most common reason across America why people go to the doctor after cold and flu. It's a very common thing. And it's also the number one driver of disability. And it's the number one reason for opioid prescriptions, even though there's no evidence that opioids are the most appropriate approach to addressing lower back pain. Yet that's one of the bigger drivers of the opioid issue, unfortunately. And when I initially was, talking with Kenneth and Ashley about their program, I wasn't so focused on the opioid issue. As you can see over my right shoulder, I've got the my most recent book. And it was because as I was really digging into the employer arena and hearing about the opioid issue, you know, ultimately realized that employers, well, first of all, the issue was getting oversimplified. There's 12 major drivers of that crisis. And as I looked at the 12 major drivers, 11 of the 12 major drivers, the employer is the key unwitting enabler. It's their plan design that they're paying for out of their pocket and out of the employee's pocket. Because, you know, let's face it, most of the opioid issue is affecting working age people and their dependents. And so I had this hypothesis that if you have proper primary care where it's not driving you towards volume and getting you in and out, which is unfortunately what you see happen a lot, my hypothesis was if you have that proper primary care, you're not going to have that opioid issue. So I went back to Kenneth and Ashley and said, hey, you know, what's the story at Rosen? You know, what are your opioid prescription rates? And they needed to pull some numbers. And turned out, you know, despite a workforce that has physically demanding jobs, you know, you've got housekeepers, you got maintenance workers and so on, they certainly have plenty of physical challenges. Their prescription rate was at 1/6 of the level of a typical U.S. employer, which basically puts them at the same level as, say, France or Italy, where there's essentially not an opioid issue. So I think that's a good example. You know, it's like there's great schools that get great test scores, but they don't teach to the test. You know, they weren't explicitly saying, we're going to fight the opioid issue, when they didn't even know there was an opioid issue, like any of us, you know, 20 years ago. They just did the right thing with proper primary care. So I think that's worth calling out because, boy, there's a lot of real harm that has come to our employees as a result of really a poor care model. You know, unfortunately, the opioid crisis isn't an anomaly. It is our healthcare system. This is unlike HIV, Ebola, polio, you know, you name it, that comes from outside. This is a self-inflicted wound by our healthcare system. So again, I think it's another key point there.
Dave, just real quick, sorry to interrupt, but the prescription that I was given for my back pain, again, mine is not, I don't think, as bad as most along the continuum, but the medication that I was given, or should I call it medication? It's a supplement, right? It's a spice. What is it?
Turmeric.
So I was given turmeric. I've been taking turmeric, you know, ever since. And it's managing quite well.
I'm also part of that 80% of adults that will have an acute back episode at some issue. Fortunately, I've been pretty healthy, knock on wood. But that's been my issue. And I've had, you know, everything done except back surgery. Fortunately, I've avoided that. And ultimately it was, you know, PT, and I sometimes carry around this lacrosse ball that I have as a prop. You know, that lacrosse ball and those exercises did more than any spinal injection and pill ever did. And so speaking of pills, I know you've also gotten some very significant savings. So the last question I have for you before we take some of the audience questions is what have you done, you know, in terms of pharmacy? That's been a growing challenge. It used to be maybe only 5% of spend. A lot of employers have seen it 15, 20, 25% spend. Tell us a little bit about what you do in terms of the pharmacy area and how I approach it. You already talked about the on-site dispensary, which is great, but tell me a little bit about what you're doing in terms of kind of the procurement and management of that.
Go ahead. So let's go back to what Ashley was talking about on the supplements. You know, there's a portion right there that we're able to reduce our pharmacy spend by using supplements, you know, vitamin D supplements, the turmeric supplements, the orthomega supplements for cholesterol levels. I mean, all of those type of things help us reduce our spend. But also, it's moving away from a synthetic product that has all of these side effects. I think we've got, can I say what we're spending on our supplements?
Sure.
Yeah. So we've got a line item spend of a budget of almost $300,000 just for supplements, which we give not only from if somebody might have an acute or a chronic issue, but also from a wellness perspective to help keep people healthy and keep them off of the prescriptions. Okay, that's one piece. one of the things that we did back in 2014 is we developed a relationship with Walmart. You know, we have three large Walmarts within a 3-mile radius, I think, of all of our properties. And we recognized that many of our associates were actually going there. So we actually dove into the data and recognized that only 6% of our population, or we had 6% market share, meaning people getting prescriptions from Walmart. So we said, we raised our hand to Walmart and had some conversations with them. And we said, hey, if we can move our market share, would you give us better rates? So basically, we were narrowing our network. So we went from 6.5% to 58% in not even 6 months. Because what we did was we said, hey, if you go to Walmart, you will get your prescription for free, your generic prescription for free. If you're getting your brand prescription, we knocked off several dollars there. But what it did was it increased our compliance. So we increased compliance on the clinical perspective and improving clinical outcomes. But what happened on the backside? We improved our compliance and made it more accessible. We've got our in-house program. We also have mail order programs. We've actually maximized our patients' assistance programs. We've maximized programs that defer some of the costs over to the manufacturers. We've maximized the coupon programs. And we've also put in a voluntary international pharmacy program. And that program helps us not only from, you know, the traditional prescriptions that is available around the world. I mean, let's go back to Lipitor as a great example. If I remember correctly, Lipitor is actually produced in either Netherlands or New Zealand, one of the N's, I don't remember. But, you know, if we were to go to Walgreens to get that prescription, that the associate would pay, I think it was $20 at the time, and we, Rosen Hotels, would pay north of $140 for 30 days. And again, we're going back years ago. Lipitor is available. It's a generic product now. I know it. I get it. Some people are back there saying that. But with our international pharmacy program, we're getting it the same product, the same Pfizer, the same, has the pedigree, everything. And it gets delivered right to the patient's door. Number one, free for the patient. So they get 90 days. So they saved $60. It's delivered to their door, so we've increased the accessibility and compliance. Number three, Rosen Hotels save a significant amount of money. So I said it was about $140 for 30 days. What do you think we paid for 90 days? About $140. And that's only on one product. So we're working on some programs as we continue to grow, evolve, and recognize the needs. And we've actually, we're in a pilot project right now for our insulin program, and that's going to save us, you know, it's a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. We have 93 of our associates and dependents that are insulin dependent. And if we can shave off pennies here and there, hopefully we can give it back to our associates.
And Kenneth, we, you know, some of these things like the international pharmacy, one doesn't need to have a medical center to take advantage of those savings. And the savings, I want to say, are around 40%, somewhere in that range?
Yeah, even significantly more. You know, we're going to be looking at the, everybody on this call knows about the Humiras and the Enbrels and the pain associated to the cost of that. We're going to be looking into that, the procurement. Yes, we can get it. The savings, yes, we can get it. But it's going to be the logistics of it to make sure that it's transported and it's received with the proper temperatures, all those kind of things. Those are the kind of things that we look at, we pilot, we test. We get test patients to receive them at their homes and to get the feedback. Again, we're trying to provide the service, the resource, and make it accessible for our patients to maximize what is going to be the maximum level of health opportunity for them. Get them to that maximum level as quickly as possible and give them all the resources that they need to get there.
Great. As we segue into the Q&A, one thing that I wanted to point out that's unique about Ashley's role as a risk manager for Rosen is, you know, they certainly have become aware of how exceptional they are as an employer and have had interest from other employers to be able to replicate what they're doing. And so one of Ashley's team members is actually part of the Health Rosetta certification program. So that means they can offer this you know, to other employers. So some other employers are actually using their services to start to implement these type of programs. Of course, I'm not going to jump in right in the middle, you know, day one to all these things. But it's notable that they do that. So Ellen and Melissa, if you want to share some of the questions, I'll pass it to you and we'll get some questions in the remaining time.
Great. So I'm going to group a couple of questions, which I'm interpreting to roughly, people are wondering how well will this apply to me? And so Ashley, if you can talk about your average annual total cost per person, and then underlying that your employee's average age and male to female ratio, and also how many locations you have and how close those, how densely grouped those locations are.
Yes, so our average cost per covered life is right around $6,000. Our average age is 48 and a half, I believe. I believe we are 52% female. As far as are you talking locations of the medical center?
Well, locations of where your employees are, and then what do those look like in relation to the medical center, and what do you do about people who are too far away from the medical center?
Yeah, so people that are too far away, you know, most of our folks are in this tri-county area that are pretty close to us, but the folks that are a little too far away, they can have their own primary care, you know, doc, but it's very far and few between, and we kind of keep tabs on what, how that doc managed those patients and that sort of thing. But the majority of our folks are well, the employees are coming to work every day. It's the dependents, I think, that we're more worried about. So, you know, if a dependent has to drive 15 miles to the medical center, that would probably be a little bit different than their choice. If they did not work for Rosen Hotels, they'd probably go to a doc, I'm guessing, that's, you know, close to their work or close to their house. But what we found over the years, and this is an old stat, and I don't know how much it has changed, but we found that I think the national average was by the time you left your office to go to or your house or whatever, and to drive to the doc, and then sit in the big room, and then you get graduated up to the little room, and you sit there for a little while, and then you get to the doc. Then you pick up your script. When you kind of look at all that, it was I think about 4 hours before you got, you know, back to the office or back home. So you know, yeah, they might have to drive 15 miles, and maybe somebody might have to drive 20 miles. But once they get here, you know, they're not sitting around waiting. They get their prescription right there, and then they're kind of you know, back to work. So I don't know if I fully answered your question though.
What's in it for me, I guess, is the question. Well, look at the employer. Our retention rate, our turnover rate. I mean, our turnover rate is south of, I think we're around 15% relative to what the industry is. What's in it for me? Well, look at that employer. It doesn't have to, you know, hire people and train people and orientate people, those type of things. So there's significant savings. What's in it? Well, guess what? You have better presenteeism. You have lower absenteeism when your individuals are healthy. And Ashley mentioned our cost for covered life is $6,000, but let's put that also into perspective. We don't have a deductible. We don't have co-insurances. We have minimal co-pays. Again. Oh, so here, let's talk about this. Specialty. You know, our specialty, according to our numbers, I mean, we're, I think, five times the average relative to everybody else. Why? Because we have a sicker population, those kind of things, and we can validate that. But most of our associates are paying $25, maybe $30 for a specialty med. What are some of these employers? Or even think about yourselves. Most of you are putting a co-insurance of 20%.
And I think getting back to that cost per covered life, I think any of you on the call, if you look at what your cost per covered life is now, because listen, you might have a younger population, you might have a less sick population than ours, and you might be at 4,000. Listen, you can reduce that by 30 to 50%. It's not rocket science.
Yeah, and I'd just add before the next question that. You know, different workforces have different tools available to them and different challenges. You know, when it comes to primary care, which is really important, you know, if you're more geographically distributed, then there's options that, you know, somewhat mimic the sort of primary care model that Rosen has, like direct primary care, for example. But then there's other things that aren't place dependent, like the pharmacy area. I mean, that can be readily addressed through working with transparent pharmacy benefits approaches. And so, again, you're going to have custom options, you know, depending on your particular thing. But the bottom line is there's always a lot of things you can do. So, Melissa, what would be the next question?
Yeah. So there's a couple of questions that are looking at additional benefits outside of healthcare spend. So you mentioned retention. I don't know if you've quantified your savings in terms of retention, and then also workers' comp. Have you tracked its impact on workers' comp, and what sort of savings are you seeing there?
Yeah. So on workers' comp, it's interesting, and sometimes it's hard to measure intuitively that we know it's working very well. Now, listen, there's some unit cost savings that Kenneth can share with you, but on work comp, our experience mod, that's kind of how you measure yourself, how well you're doing in work comp. 1.0 is the average. If you're at 1.5, you're paying 50% more than most people. If you're at 0.5, you're paying half of what most people pay. And so our mod is one of the lowest in the industry, and it's right around 0.57. So we're paying about, you know, 57% of what, you know, what the average employer or hotel pays. And it's interesting when, you know, there are a few people out there that really skew your work comp costs. So if somebody blows out their back on the weekend, they come to work, fake an injury. And listen, this is a gross example, but fake an injury and then get it covered under work comp. Or even if they legitimately get hurt under work comp, they start dragging things out a lot longer than it should be. So when our primary care doc calls the orthopedic doc and says, hey, I know we're not an objective party because, you know, we're self-insured and we're paying for these work comp patients. But, you know, when Joe Smith comes in there next time, you know, I want you to look for this, this, and this because he, you know, this guy's milking the system. And so those type advantages of having our own medical center can reduce work comp significantly.
And then what about retention? Do you have any numbers around your retention savings?
I don't think we ever, again, we never dug deep into that. So we do not, we just intuitively, we know we are, we're kind of crushing it because our turnover is about 14% and the hotels and restaurants, you know, we have 34 restaurants, the hotels and restaurants that we compete with are in the, you know, 50-75% range. So we should measure that, but unfortunately we do not.
All right. A couple of clarifying questions. The $6,000 is per covered life, not per employee, correct?
Correct. And okay. And our population, so a third of our population comes from Haiti. And so we've got a sicker population than most, right? If we had a conventional type, you know, population, I suspect that our cost would be $4,000, $4,500, somewhere in that range.
And that number, the $6,000 is all in. That's inclusive of the medical center, inclusive of dental, inclusive of pharmacy, hospitalization, inpatient, outpatient, reinsurance, it's all in.
Great. And it sounded like the workers' comp treatments occur in the medical center as well.
Well, the primary care portion of it does, right? And the PT portion,
correct.
Kenneth?
Correct.
But, I mean, when they need to go get fixed, we do not have an orthopedic doc on staff.
Correct.
Great. And so I'm going to bundle some other questions. It looks like people are wondering how much of what you see is due to getting out of the traditional fee-for-service system, how much of some of the reduction in workers' comp and other related medical comes from getting people into programs quickly instead of delaying.
Yeah, so early intervention is key, and that's been a key to a lot of our success. So for example, on the work comp side, I mean, we get them to PT quickly. We do early intervention on work comp and all of our healthcare. Mm-hmm. And I forgot the first part of your question, though.
The first part was how much of the savings is coming from getting out of the traditional fee-for-service system.
So listen, you know, I guess to some degree, you know, we're still in fee-for-service, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
Kenneth, you might be able to speak to this.
Yeah, so we still have some of our contracts which are fee-for-service. You know, we do have some DRGs. We're working on some bundles. So a majority of it is, again, going to be from the controlling of the chronic care conditions. If we're really talking about, if we're looking at the big savings, you know, 75 to 85% of one spend in a healthcare system is going to be on the chronic care conditions. So if you're controlling those, you're controlling your spend. Early intervention, you know, we have people who are going to get total knee replacements. We have them do physical therapy prior to their total knee replacements, and having it at our medical center makes it convenient. So I think early intervention, I think controlling the chronic care conditions, managing the utilization from a, where are they going from a resource standpoint, and then just managing the high risk cases that are out there.
I think we're basically, you know, Dave mentioned earlier that, you know, we've got these really good savings against this backdrop of fee for service and all this other stuff. You know, what we're kind of doing is starving the fee for service system. That's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah, that's
great. And this question may be a little bit more for Dave, but the question about, so you're currently several thousand lives. You started at 500. How well does all of this translate to a smaller employer, someone with either less than 100 or in the 100 to 1,000 range?
I think you'll hear a bunch of different answers to this. We think you need about 1,000 covered lives to do something similar to what we're doing. But Dave mentioned something very powerful earlier. Although you might not be able to get all the advantages of what we're doing, you could have a 50 life group and have a, you know, a direct primary care, you know, relationship. Again, you may not have all of the bells and whistles that we have, but it's certainly a great, great start doing something like that.
Yeah, and I just echo that. I mean, once you get above 50, it's pretty straightforward to be able to take advantage of some of these programs that give you the freedom, you know, to really get proactive, whether it's a part of your self-insured fully or you're part of some captive insurance model. And then, yeah, certainly as far as having your own clinic, and all those things, you do need to be a little bigger, but as Ashley mentioned, that's where direct primary care can be quite helpful.
We have a few more questions, but given the time, we do, but a lot of these, I think it may be easier just to answer in writing, and I do want to be respectful not only of our presenter's time, but also of our listeners' time. So I will turn it over to Ellen to wrap it up.
All right. Well, thank you everyone for joining us. As Melissa said, any questions that didn't get answered in the Q&A section, we will get those to you via email. We also next week will send a follow-up email with a recording of this presentation. Dave, Ashley, thank you guys very much. If you have any parting words, feel free to jump in.
No, just, you know, thanks for having us, and don't be shy about doing, you know, putting your foot in the water. You know, you don't have to do everything we're doing, you know, put your foot in the water. But one thing is for sure, if you don't do something drastically different than you're doing now, you're not going to hope that insurance increase away.
Yeah. And thanks again to both of you for sharing. I mean, to me, the most exciting piece of this is the dividend, you know, that goes back to your community, your immediate community of your employees, your associates, and, you know, their health, their well-being, the fact that they can get the American dream, you know, and get college education, and what it's meant for the community. That's what really excites me excites me about what you've all done. And thank you for doing your great work, and wish you the luck. And thanks for being a resource.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.